Coming to you by way of the not-for-profit Mainframe Studios in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast for building community through the arts as we build an arts community. I'm your host, Pat Bode, and today I'm at the Kessinger Home on Des Moines' South Side, also known as Yellow Door Gallery. Emily Suzanne Kessinger and her husband Mason returned to Emily's native Des Moines from Chicago with the intent of opening an in-home gallery and hosting salons. We'll talk about those in a moment and what that actually means. And yes, the front door is and was yellow at the time of purchase. Mason is a web developer, graphic designer, and ceramic artist. Emily spends her days as marketing manager for the White's Company, but will be focusing on her work as a gallerist and community builder. We'll provide details at the end of this podcast, but now that Emily and Mason have brought a beautiful baby boy into the world, and he is beautiful, I just met him, they're taking Yellow Door Gallery on the road with an upcoming salon, number 18, scheduled for May 7th at Fox Brewing in West Des Moines. You're going to want to not miss that, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we interviewed the remarkable Ben Gardner in episode 2, and I mentioned then that he and my son, Andy Davis, were the inaugural visual artists for the Yellow Door Gallery and Salon back in, I want to say, January of when? It was
2017. January of 2017.
And I want to harken back to that day for a moment. You won't remember this, Emily, but I'm actually wearing the blouse, the Art Mom blouse that night.
It's a fabulous blouse.
Thank you. But I'm wearing it for the purpose of remembering back to just the level of excitement and energy that was in the room. We had two visual artists. We had a poet. I think that might have even been the night I tasted sour beer, but maybe that was a later salon.
No, that was the sour beer night.
Yeah, that was the sour.
Marcus Walsh, yeah.
Awesome. So it was an exciting and just energizing time for me. We were doing something very new and different. So can you help this podcast audience understand what that new and different was and how that night was for you, inviting kind of a set of strangers into your home, doing something and breaking ground on something that had never really been done, at least of late?
Sure, sure. Well, as you mentioned, we welcomed, you know, close to 80, maybe 100. I think I lost count. Friends and strangers into our home. And the entertainment that you mentioned and the art and the music and poetry and beer came from friends and strangers too. So I knew Andy Davis, your son. I've known him since, you know, I was probably 12. But then Ben Gardner was a new, friend and artist. And actually he's become one of Mason and I's closest friends in Des Moines. And I think, you know, there was some hesitancy from Mason and I of what are we doing here? Are we crazy? What's the worst that could happen? You know, do we need insurance for this? Are we going to have enough food? But we had In Rooms Play, which is a husband and wife duo. And then Anna Meister read her poetry, and I knew Anna from Roosevelt, but I did not know In Rooms. And then Marcus Walsh served beer, and he was a new friend to Mason and I, too. So, you know, it all went well. No one got hurt. They enjoyed the art on the, you know, walls, and Andy and Ben spoke, and Anna read poetry, and Marcus spoke, and everyone was able to ask questions of the contributors to the night, the creators. And it went so well, we decided we'd keep doing it.
And now you're going to be doing salon number 18.
Yeah.
And I've been to the vast majority of them. I have not made everyone like I wanted to because I left town a couple
you
of nights.
You are still the VIP. But
Yeah. But you've started then to describe it really quite well. And there was some nervousness, I suppose, that first time.
Sure.
But it has gone well and it's continued to go well. What do you see as the reason for this kind of concept kind of taking hold and taking off?
I think because it's unique and different in a way for people to engage not only with the art or the medium of creation, but the artist and creator. So to be able to see a body of work or hear music or spoken words or taste food or drink and then get a chance to interact with the person that made it, I think that's kind of a next level experience that enhances the initial interaction with the work, the piece, or the song, if you will. So I realized that that for me kind of took art and has taken art and experiences to the next level, because what's behind a work is a person, right? And to be able to get to know that person, I think, enables you to better understand their creation or piece.
What have you learned in doing this about the world of art, about curating, and about connecting with these artists?
Every artist is so different and every creator is so different. I think some artists, you know why they create, and some are creating to find that out. And I think that's sort of a beautiful thing, and something that, you go to a museum and you read an artist statement on a wall, right? And you, like the Art Center show that is up now, those works are meant to show something that took a long time to make, that's common in everyday. And you view everything differently as you go through that. But some artists are just making things because they felt like they should make them and they don't know why. So I think trying to sometimes objectively or subjectively look at art, depending on what mode you're in, can transform it differently. I think of like Andy's works, right? His pencil drawings in particular, and they're kind of abstracted, natural forms of nature or the human body and form. And hearing him talk about it takes you to a different place with his work, opposed to not hearing him talk about it and just seeing it. I think for the Yellow Door experience, that's what we set out to kind of do, is have people view things differently. That's a long answer to your question.
No, it's good. But what are the challenges in kind of curating? When I normally think of curating, you're thinking of someone in a gallerist. You think right. of someone curating in a gallery with a set of walls, and people are going to come through and maybe they'll sit at a bench and watch it. But there's not necessarily going to be this level of curating that includes poetry or music or, in your case, comedy. And the list goes on of the different elements you've brought into this mix. How do you curate that? What's going through your head?
Sometimes I'm looking at bringing together really diverse forms that might not make a ton of sense together, to be honest, and just kind of to challenge the viewers to find their own associations. And sometimes I see, they'll be both abstract artists that use complementary color forms. It could be as simple as that, or it could be one show actually several shows I didn't even really curate, to be honest. I mean, from a visual art side only, Jim and Gian Shrewsbury out of Fairfield, they're a good example. They're a father and daughter, and I wanted them to show together, and I just said, bring your work, and they installed everything. So it was their creative process on the walls. I brought in, the complimentary kind of music and food and all of that components that seem to, fit with what they were doing. But sometimes visually, it is the artists who are curating, which I think is also a unique thing, because a lot of galleries, that's not a traditional model. Gallerists are, curating from start to finish. And I don't really believe in that always, honestly. And I think some people find it surprising or maybe strange because it's different, but I like giving that opportunity. Laurel Theron and Douglas Deggs, that was a teacher-student relationship, and they brought their own work. I picked out Laurel's works for the show, but then Douglas brought his, and they installed it themselves. And they have fun doing that. I mean, I've had numerous artists say, that was really fun. We got to play with the space. We got to play with our work, something that they might do personally in their studios, but that they don't get to often do in a space where the public see it as much. And so I've liked that opportunity because I learn from the artists and I learn what, they like. Usually they'll ask for my opinion and insight and should we put this here? And I'll say, I don't like that there. Can we move it? Did you think about it this way? So it becomes a collaborative process. But a lot of the curation has been you know, friends of friends of friends. So it's a word of mouth sort of experience that this Yellow Door community has, I think, created, which is the best part for me.
Well, and I love that phrase you just used, the Yellow Door community. Tell me more about that community. Who's in it? How is it working as an organism?
Sure. Friends of friends of friends. I mean, it's such a word of mouth community. So I think people will, you know, tell their coworker or their neighbor, did you hear about this event? You know, we have an Instagram presence. I think that's helped. But so many of the artists are from Des Moines, from Chicago, from New York, related to ACRE, which is an arts organization that's based in Chicago, that has a residency program. And so, I think the arts community that is in Des Moines is bigger than Des Moines as well, because you have artists who are doing residencies outside of Des Moines and really even the state of Iowa. I mean, I've shown artists from Fairfield, Iowa City, Ames. It's the arts community of Iowa, but also the Midwest. And then you have, like I said, residencies at Yaddo in New York or Every Coat of Paint in New York. There's, you know, dozens of really great programs. You know, Jordan Weber, who you interviewed, has done ones across the country and in Nebraska. And so the community, you know, started small, I think, with people that Mason and I knew and people that those people knew, and has really since grown because the artists and the poets and the comedians and the musicians, you know, bring in their communities as well. So it's really neat because I think there's a sense of support that's shared amongst all those people.
When you talked about the artists being able to kind of curate this thing themselves,
yeah,
it sounded like a pretty empowering potential for the arts community building that you're doing. What else do you see when you pull all this together, this empowerment piece, this support piece? Are there other elements of this arts community that you're helping to build that are taking shape?
I don't know if I'm helping to build it. I think a lot of people are helping to build it. I mean, there's so much of this that I couldn't have done without sounding boards of artist friends and people like you and, you know, other community organizers, really, to just say, is this a crazy idea? But I think, you know, there's people who have done versions of this before me. And so Matt Greiner, who was with Chicken Tractor and is now doing community building in his own right, you know, I met with him early on to say, what worked for you and what didn't work for you? And so learning from other people, I think, is the greatest way to continue to build a strong community. Asking people to get coffee and to say, and to hear their stories and what, you know, what are they doing? I think there's strength in numbers. And so, you know, partnering with other organizations. When you interviewed Matt McIver, he mentioned Open Door Rep, and they are doing amazing theater pop-ups, and they did a few in this space, which was really fun to have them come in. So
yeah, I saw one that was really outstanding.
Yeah. So I don't know if, I mean, I think you can do it alone, but there are ways to do it better together.
And that's fantastic. So there's this collaboration piece. I guess what I'm trying to do is create a bit of a list,
right,
of the features of a healthy arts community.
And you're doing it.
So
you're not trying, you're doing
support,
it.
Collaboration.
Right.
Am I missing anything on the list that you've witnessed, that you see taking shape?
I think you have to have like a pretty tight vision at what you're trying to do. I think if you try and do it all or don't exactly, I think you can start out and, you know, not know what you're doing, but I think you want to pretty quick figure out what is it you're trying to do, because you can't do it all. And I think part of the challenge for me at first was, you know, I want to have a gallery in my house open to the public all the time, and you know, that wasn't possible. And then it's, you know, you ask yourself, or I was asking myself questions like, do I want to start a gallery here? Do I have the manpower and ability? And I think just knowing what you want to do and what you're good at, I think the drive and vision, I would add to that, because I think that's what everyone you've talked to has, and what a lot of successful community builders have.
Speak to me for a moment before we close here about the concept of collecting.
Yeah.
Where are we status-wise in terms of the Des Moines community as a group of folks who understand how, what to collect and what that may mean for our arts community and for the community at large?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that too is a reason that I started doing what I'm doing. I think collecting starts with education and figuring out what you like. Because I have seen a lot of people that I know in Des Moines that, you know, hang works on their walls that are from Target or IKEA or are mass produced, or they're buying them because they're convenient and inexpensive, and they're not seeing the value in a long-term, you know, more expensive piece that they like or have a connection to. And I think that is because of arts education and understanding the arts world and making it accessible. So I think collecting starts with education and then accessibility. So art everywhere, right? Which Des Moines has done a phenomenal job of, I think, in the last 5 years. We have so many public arts pieces and more every day. And I think, as Jordan said, we need more, right? So we all want to continue to see more. I think artists are doing even a better job here in Des Moines at becoming accessible themselves through, you know, the market day events, the maker fairs that go on here. There is sometimes fine art at those, and you can buy a work of art here for, you know, $200 sometimes, which is affordable. Sometimes framing is more than the art, right? So
yeah.
I want to, you know, share that with people. And I think we have done a pretty good job of that at Yellow Door, and just saying, like, here's art on the wall of a home, and it could be yours. I think you can also buy art from auction. I mean, that's how I got started with my own collection, because there's some really beautiful, affordable pieces from artists who, you know, I don't know, but that at least kind of, you know, there has to be a tipping point or a kind of domino effect, I think, for people. And I think that can also start for some by connecting directly with the artist.
If I wanted to become a collector and I didn't know a whole lot, mm-hmm. what would be the place you'd tell me to get started on that path for education and understanding?
Honestly, I think, like, walk around Mainframe. I mean, get to see how people work and where they work and what they create, and talk to them. Talk to artists. Get to, you know, understand why they create or how they create. It's such an awesome process. I mean, people ask me a lot, you know, are you an artist? And maybe, I mean, define artist. I like to think that I'm creative. I have always been friends with artists. I don't make anything, but I have a lot of ideas. And so for me, my creative outlet has become, you know, executing my ideas and supporting my friends and artists as I go. And so I think just working to understand why people create is the best.
And I would have to say that attending your salons has been one of the big delights of my life over the past few years. It's absolutely true. Each and every one of them has had something extremely interesting at a minimum to offer, and many times some passion has been triggered or some emotion has been evoked, and certainly we've gotten to meet people. So they're wonderful gatherings. So that's a setup, but a truthful one,
yes.
For you to describe what's going to be happening on May 7th at Fox Brewing.
Sure. So I am no longer hosting salons in my home.
Because you have a baby.
Because we have a baby. But we are always looking for spaces around town. And Fox Brewing has a great location in a sort of warehousey multi-purpose space just south of Valley Junction. So Fox Brewing was founded by a guy that went to Valley High School. Local shout out. Brian Fox. And it's going to be May 7th, which is a Tuesday. It's the first time I've ever done an event on a Tuesday. But we're going to have Zet Gold, who is from LA, Sam Fafala, who is a local film producer. Well, Zet Gold lives in Des Moines, I should say, sorry. And yeah, she's a visual artist. She's awesome.
Get her on the show, yes.
You should totally speak to Zet. And I haven't even met Zet. So these things totally come together sometimes just via like, hey, I like you. I like you, Zet. Sam Fafala, who's a local film producer, videographer, cinematographer, will show a short of his on a projector. And then Januchi Power, which is a five-person band. I think they call themselves Dad Rock Pop for Your Ears or something. their slogan's pretty funny. I haven't heard them play live even, but I've heard great things about them. And then Coffee from Black and Bold Coffee. They're roasting facility is actually in Fox Brewing. And then food is going to be done by Trish Myers, who was formerly of More Tacos. So More Tacos was downtown and they had quite a following. So I'm super excited to have her tacos. And I do have to give a shout out because you asked about curation. This event, and actually a lot of my salons, when I talk about running ideas past people, I talked to Ben Gardner and was like, I'm really having trouble of like, you know, what visually would really complement all of these other forms. So, you know, I found Fox first, found the roaster, and then everything else came together. And he said, why don't you do kind of like a West Coast styled event? And that's what this is going to be, kind of a throwback. So Ben helped me kind of put the icing on the cake for the idea of this beer, coffee, tacos, film, cool music, and these awesome drawings and works by Zet.
Well, I, for one, cannot wait.
Yeah, sorry, long answer.
No,
again,
it was a great answer. That's what I was hoping. Because it helps people understand what we're talking about, too, when we're talking about salons.
Yeah.
And they have kind of, I would say, and I'd love to talk to you more, but we're going to run out of time here, evolved since that first one that had Andy and Ben and a couple of other folks. And they seem to have gotten increasingly diverse and exciting and just really a wonderful evolution of the salon concept. And I think a concept that you've really tried to make accessible to a lot of different people as well, versus the old historical salons, which were, I think, more a little intentionally highbrow.
Right. These are low-key, come talk to people and listen for, you know, I try to always keep it less than an hour of music and talking.
Yeah. So we have plenty of time to eat and drink and be merry around all of that stuff as well. So hopefully folks can catch that on May 7th. I always like to remind folks of the First Friday event at Mainframe Studios.
Yes.
And now those of you who are burgeoning collectors, sounds like Emily's recommending that May 3rd might be a good time for you to get out there and start talking to artists.
Yes.
So I hope you'll do that as well. And please, if you haven't done it, go back and check episode number 2 with Benjamin Gardner, a fascinating and wonderful artist. And with that, we're going to close this issue of 900 Views. Thanks for listening.